video games, movies, comics.
Podcast from Oscar Mike Media.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 23rd episode of the Oscar Mike Media Podcast, the one after E3, where Chris is very tired. I'm, as always, your host, Chris Lipscomb. We are joined this week by a regular host, Lewis Gaston, head dude over at ScreenDemon.com. Say hello, Lewis.
Hello.
Sadly, Peter is very, very, very sick and bedridden at the minute. So get better, Peter. Feel good and stuff. So filling in his rather large Irish.
Chris is angry at you.
I'm not angry at him.
He is. He's really angry.
Before we went
at you.
On air, said, "I'm pissed at Peter for being ill this week after E3." That's exactly what you said, Chris.
then he said he was going to punch him in the face.
Yep.
That's what he said.
I said all those things. And as you can hear, filling in Peter's rather large Irish shoes, we have Josh, you may know from the Six Axis. Say hello, Josh.
Hola.
Excellent. I don't know why I did an H at the beginning of excellent there. I am really fucking tired. I need to start getting more than like 5 hours sleep. Right. Josh, you were going to see Luther, but you didn't have time. So, Lewis, you have seen Luther, the TV series. It actually looks really good, and I'm going to try and make time to watch it.
Oh, it's amazing. If you're not, I'll take it you haven't seen season one then.
No, I didn't see season one, but I know that. Because I normally have like I make time to try and watch like one TV show a week, and now that Doctor Who's on break for the summer, I've got time to watch Luther. So I might give that a pop because it looks really good.
It's amazing. The first series was brilliant, and the second series just started on Tuesdays, and it's brilliant again. Alice is back, which I was so pleased about. Because I saw her in the trailer, but I didn't know in which capacity she'd be back, because obviously after the ending of the first one. But she's back, and Luther's back, and they're all back. Now I'm really excited. And there's they got a new psychopath to look out for.
Because I read your review on Screen Demon, and it sounds really cool. And you said, like, the dynamic with Alice is kind of like Silence of the Lambs, you were saying?
Yeah, because, I mean, it was like that in the first season, because she's obviously a psycho astrophysicist, extremely clever and extremely well-versed in sort of psychology as well. So he used to go to her for advice and things, and it was a lot like Starling and Lecter. And the first season of this first episode of the second series, she's in a I won't ruin it for you actually, Chris. She's in a mental hospital,
okay,
a secure mental hospital. And he sort of goes to visit her, and the way that their meeting ends is quite it's very teasing. And it gives you an idea of what they're going to plan and what they're going to do. So that's very good. And she's just an absolute brilliant character. She's so quirky and funny. But obviously then she's this mad psycho woman. So it's a brilliant character to watch. And obviously Luther's a very good character. He's just a rebellious, unorthodox policeman, but he's actually quite loyal and quite troubled in himself. Mm. So. But he's very good, and like I say, the new psycho that's in it is extremely creepy. It was an extremely creepy episode, very jumpy and very scary, because he walks around with a hood and a Punch and Judy mask, or Mr. Punch mask, the doll out of Saw.
Yeah, that sounds the way you talked about it in the review. It sounded really scary.
Yeah, it was proper and even portions of what he wants to do is he says he wants to bring fear back into the hearts of the people walking around London. He said they've lost the meaning of what it's like to be truly scared. And there's no secret about who he is. Even the police find out who he is halfway through the first episode, so there's no mystery there, which makes everything a lot more tense, because they know it's him. they just can't do anything about it. They don't know like where he lives, that sort of thing, which makes the whole thing a lot more tense. And one of his murders is in broad daylight and it still manages to be really jumpy. So it's just shot absolutely brilliantly, and the writing of it is superb as well. So yeah, that's the start of Luther season two, and I can't wait, because there's a couple of other excuse me there's a couple of other
bless you.
Thank you. There's a couple of other sort of story branches to it as well, like obviously you've got the main psycho bit, and then but you've got the bit with Alice, and then there's another sort of plot that Luther goes off on, so there seems to be quite a bit to it at the moment. I think they're only doing a 4 or 5 episode run, which is a bit shit, but they're going to be 4 or 5 superb hours, so
all right, yeah,
we can live with that.
Well, the BBC are doing that sort of shorter seasons a bit more recently with Sherlock as well, is similar.
I think
it can work quite well, I think.
Yeah, because they did it with Doctor Who, didn't they? The reason they had this mid-season break was to allow for a bigger budget and
yeah, exactly,
more time to be spent on everything, which is a good thing, because if it improves the quality. But yeah, I mean, Luther's 4 or 5 episodes. Shadowline, which I've been watching with Chiwetel Ejiofor.
What's that about? I really want to see it.
Oh, that finale is tonight, and that's been about 6 or 7 episodes. It is just an absolutely phenomenal detective program. Another detective program with another black lead. It's like these black detectives, they're just awesome as of late. I half expect Denzel to get involved sooner or later.
Has it got Christopher Eccleston in it?
Yes, it has. It's got loads of people in it. It's got what's his face? Can't remember it now. Stephen Rea.
Oh yeah.
And there's a bloke, I don't know his name, but there's a bloke who plays like one of the, I'll tell you what, the Shadowline is basically Chiwetel Ejiofor plays a detective that is shot in the head. He goes out to a drug thing with his partner, and his partner gets shot, but the bullet goes through his head and then into Chiwetel Ejiofor's head.
Okay.
But stops before it can kill him. So he's got this bullet lodged in his head that they can't take out.
Yeah.
And he's lost his memory. And then they give him his job back and say, you're fit enough to return. But he doesn't know what happened or what the deal was with this with the incident. And then at the end of the first episode, he finds a briefcase full of money in his wardrobe, and he starts worrying that he was possibly a bent cop beforehand.
Oh, that's such great.
But he doesn't remember being that at all, so that was quite interesting. But it's weird for a TV series, because it's written, directed and produced by one person, a bloke called Hugo Black.
Yeah.
And it's about drug, like there's a family of drug runners, and Christopher Eccleston's the uncle of this drug family. It's quite complicated to explain, but it's not hard to get to grips with it when it's on TV, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's just done so superbly. The acting is brilliant, and the direction and like the cinematography is film quality, and it's constant as well. There's never a minute that isn't. It feels like they've taken every single second of the program and worked out down to like a pencil on the desk sort of thing where everything should be. It looks that good.
Oh, awesome.
And they take their time with everything. Like, nothing's rushed. There's scenes where people just stare at each other for like what seems like a minute, and it's given care. Like, they haven't rushed it all through.
Yeah.
It's everything's got time to simmer, and it's just really good.
I love drama that does that, where they can sort of tell bits of story without actually having to say anything.
Yeah.
It's so rarely done well, and it's brilliant if they're pulling it off.
And Stephen Rea in particular plays this mysterious sort of man called Gatehouse, who we're starting to, the finale's tonight, and I think only in the past episode or two we've started to find out who he is and what his role in the whole thing is, but he's in it throughout from the start, and he plays this just cold, calculated, super efficient mercenary type person, or what you think is a mercenary, and he's He's got glasses, a scarf, a little jacket, and a little top hat. Not a top hat, but like a little hat. And he's constantly wearing that. So calm and collected, and yet he's capable of doing vile things. Like, he wouldn't blink to shoot a baby.
Oh yeah.
If it meant stopping the chain from reaching wherever the police or what have you. So yeah, he's particularly brilliant in it to watch and just see just how ruthless he is. But yeah, excuse me. Fucking cough. It'll be on DVD soon because I think the BBC release things on DVD the minute the season finishes. So yeah, if you can, or if you go on iPlayer, I think it'll still be on there. If you get time, you should definitely check it out. It's a brilliant series.
Yeah.
I will do. It does sound very good.
Yeah, it does sound great.
Super. Like I say, I'm probably not doing it enough justice, but it's you have to watch it to see what I mean by sort of style and the fact that it's not rushed. But it's still full of quite a lot of action and it's extremely intelligent plot. And the other good thing about it is the nephew of like the drug family. He's called Jay Ratton. And have any of you seen Pete versus Life?
Oh, I think I have. Yeah.
It's a bloke from that, but he's just nuts. He's absolutely nuts, and he's brilliantly nuts with it as well. He comes across as quite childish and quite infant-like, which I think is part of the charm, or part of the sort of worry with it, really. But the thing I constantly think about him is I keep thinking if Nolan were to ever need another Joker to replace Ledger, this bloke is it down to a T.
Oh, that's great.
That's the type of creepy criminal he is. He's superb. And he looks like him and sounds like him as well.
That's cool. He could maybe do, because they wouldn't do the Joker, they could do something like the Riddler. He'd probably fit that.
Yeah,
that'd be cool. but those sound brilliant. I must try and get hold of them and just give them a watch.
Definitely.
Peter, although he is not here, has quickly chipped in on Twitter to say, are you sure it's episode 23? I think it might be 22.
I think you might be right.
Which made me laugh when that popped up on my feed. yeah, it's just like, oh, Peter, oh, I miss you.
Right. Yeah, if he's well enough to be using Twitter, surely he's capable of speaking on a podcast.
No, he's not allowed out of bed.
Some people.
He's literally, his wife will kill him if he gets out of bed, I think. But yeah, his doctor said he's not really supposed to get out of bed for about a week, which must suck. So, I think he...
I'm surprised, like, you haven't just run amok with TSA in his absence.
Well, he's away, and Al is only here for, like, 2 hours a day at the minute. So, Dan wanted to turn it into the Nintendo Axis. and see if we get away with it. But then I think we realized that we've taken actual effort and we got bored of that plan. Right, Hellblazer, which is a comic which I have been reading, which the first I was like, oh, I'll just get the first one to see if I like it and see it's the although it's an odd comic because most comics are cool, like named after who they're about, but Hellblazer is actually about John Constantine. Which is odd to me slightly because you normally like, oh, this is like Spider-Man. It's about Spider-Man. They're kind of done. But part of it's Hellblazer is because although it is about Constantine, it's what's the best way to describe it? It's kind of like he is the central character, but an awful lot is happening. So, yeah. I guess maybe.
To be fair, to describe John Constantine, that Hellblazer is probably the perfect.
Yeah,
term.
It's true, but it's kind of like I guess maybe a bit like Terry Pratchett in that yeah, you've got a central character, but
he's got Alzheimer's.
No, not like he's got Alzheimer's, but I mean you've got that's kind of mean, particularly after the documentary did this week. But it's kind of like you've got this central character.
I can't remember watching it.
His documentary was. Oh, that was bad. Yeah, it took me a second. Oh, that was bad.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Sorry,
but,
my God.
That's all right. But yeah, so, but it's kind of like you have the central character, but really they're just there so that you can see the rest of the world.
Right.
Which is quite a nice way to do it. It's kind of similar to the way Neil Gaiman does Sandman. It's a little bit similar to that. And you're seeing lots of like events and stuff which are happening, but you know Constantine's going to be there at some point, but he's not necessarily there when the event happens, which is very uncommon for comic books. Mostly you're like, oh, I just follow the character through and that sort of thing, or you're following like some like the books that are multiple characters, like team books. You're following like the multiple characters through it, but you're always with someone. But this is a lot of, no, like, this is happening over here, and then Constantine comes in. It's kind of written more like a novel, I suppose, in compared to a comic book.
Is it introducing possible spin-off characters, or is it just literally events that are happening outside of Constantine's immediate area?
No, it doesn't really introduce spin-off characters. It's kind of like... It sounds really weird to say this, but it's kind of like, you know, the bit at the beginning of CSI where you see the crime happen and the rest of it's solving the crime. It's kind of like that. It's like there's bits where it's of setting up for like the rest of the story later on. But it's just kind of like, here's this stuff happening over here. And then at some point, the start of the book, because the book I've got's got, as I was saying, I'll just dip in to see if I like it, and the book I bought is like 300 pages long, because for some reason all the Hellblazer trades are massive. So the first story in it is kind of, it starts in America, and you see all this stuff happening in America, and when you see Constantine, the first time you see Constantine, he's in London and doesn't know that any of this is going on at all. And doesn't go to America for about 40 pages or something. So it's a really interesting story. I absolutely love it. And yeah, it's nice to see one written more like that, where they're like, it written that sort of, well, this stuff happens over here and you know this is going to be the story eventually, but we'll get to that in a minute. Here's like all the other stuff about the character. Which is really interesting. And you see that, like, you do see that Constantine is a right arsehole. Absolutely. He is a cunt.
I'm still annoyed that, because I only found out he was English when you said a week or so ago.
Yeah. Do you think...
It annoys me that they didn't make him English in the film.
Yeah. Think how much better that film would have been if he was, like, proper East End.
Yeah.
Which is kind of how he
and
is.
I like the film, but if they'd got someone better than Keanu Reeves, then that could have been a really good film.
I really like it in the his character design's changed a lot more recently, but in the first when it starts off, he's sort of wearing a suit all the time, which is really kind of, I like it. It's quite nice. But kind of in the style and cut of it, he does look a little bit like an East End gangster, which is quite nice. Like, I like the whole attitude of it. And it's nice.
And plus, you need that attitude when you're going up against Hell Demon.
Exactly. And it's kind of like how other characters don't... It's different because so rarely in comics, a lot of like the relationship between characters is kind of based off of fear. But this is very much respect. So, like, none of them are really scared of him, and they all think he's a complete twat. They're just like... there are some people who don't quite say it exactly, but just come close to saying, I fucking hate you. I hate you, John. You're such an arsehole.
Yeah. Have you seen the film?
Yeah, I've seen the film. And
it's completely different in that, because he hasn't got the attitude or anything. He's really softy, nicey, and...
I don't know. I think in the film he does come across as a bit of a twat. He's quite... He does come across in the film as kind of like, doesn't really give a shit about what people think. He's just like, I'm doing my job, and that's it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really get that from the film. There's an element of that, I suppose.
I think
the beginning,
in the beginning, and then when he first meets the girl, and is trying to explain it to her. And he's just like, I don't give a shit if you don't believe me, this is just it, kind of thing.
Mm.
And then particularly in the scene with the devil, when the devil comes to collect him.
Oh, I love that scene.
And you can tell, like, at that point, it really does come across that he just doesn't care. Like, he's never going to back down. He doesn't give a shit what the consequences are.
See, I didn't get that from that scene. I got that he'd fallen in love with Rachel Voigt's character, and was therefore sort of being quite chivalrous, if that's the right word.
I do suppose that is, yeah, that's definitely a way you could take that scene. But to me, it's just kind of very much like when the devil comes to him, he's just like, yeah, fuck you. I don't care. What are you going to do to me? And it's particularly a great, because it's a great change from how he is in earlier in the film, where he's trying to suck up to heaven and all this stuff. And at the end, he's just like, oh, fuck it, whatever. But part of that attitude, I think, as well, is he's quite a... At times, he can be quite a clever character, kind of thinking ahead and looking at the angles to an extent. But what I quite like about him as well, he's the kind of character that isn't quite as clever as he thinks he is. So there is literally a point, actually, in the first story where he comes completely unstuck, where he's like, he's got a ghost with him. It's the ghost of his I don't want to say it's the ghost of someone. And then he's with her, and she's kind of like, don't go for this, don't attack this dude. And he's like, no, I can totally take this dude. And then like five panels later, he's running for his life. So yeah, it's kind of the fact that he always thinks he knows the end game, and although he does always come out on top, quite often, like in the middle, he comes a little bit unstuck, is quite nice. I think I quite like that. Yeah, but cool. It's really good. It's really well written, and it's very different.
Is it standalone as well?
Yeah. Oh, it's complete standalone. Like we were talking in the talking about this in the comic shop yesterday, actually, and we talked about how because it's on the DC's Vertigo imprint, and for those who don't know what imprint is, it's like a subdivision kind of the main thing. And we talk about how like most Vertigo books are, you buy it in collection because DC are really worried because all the weekly sales and Vertigo books are really low. But the thing is, no one buys them weekly. You wait till they're collected and you buy the collection. But I was like, oh, I don't really know where to start with DMC. And he was just like, well, you start at issue one. It's a Vertigo book. You always start issue one with Vertigo books. Otherwise, you don't know what the fuck's going on. And apart from Hellblazer, he was like, oh, yeah, no, apart from Hellblazer. Hellblazer's just like, meh. Because the brilliant thing about Hellblazer is what you need to know is there's demons, Constantine is magic, go. And that's pretty much it.
Done.
Yeah. It really does work. And it's the same way that when Neil Gaiman was talking about Doctor Who, and sort of, well, all you really need to know for Doctor Who is he's a man who travels in time and space in a box and he will find adventure. Go. And it kind of works when you can break a story down to that level. I think, you know, you've got something quite special, actually. Because so often, like, some stories can be so difficult to kind of grasp and can be so convoluted. But when you can just go, here's this, like, that's it. Like, you couldn't break Lost down into, like, less than a sentence, could you?
Are you sorry?
Lost. Like, no, you couldn't break the plot of Lost down into a sentence. So, yeah.
You couldn't break the plot of Lost down into a fucking...
You couldn't break the plot of Lost...
2-hour speech.
You couldn't break the plot of Lost down into a book as thick as the scripts of Lost. And you still wouldn't be there.
They certainly didn't manage it.
No, exactly. That was brilliant. I was into a podcast and it had Kirkman, who was Walking Dead, and Damon Lindelof on it. And someone was like, so do you know where this is going? And Damon Lindelof just suddenly goes, don't answer that question. Which is, I was like, don't answer that question, you will regret it if you give them the answer to that question. And I was like, oh, it's nice that he can poke fun at himself.
Yeah Well, at the end of the day, regardless of the negatives that people say about it, it's it's in history now, isn't it?
Yeah, it did do, like, made them a hell of a lot of money. So it must have done something right at some point. Which is probably to write a really good season one and then kind of
have people just hang on.
And then go, we'll wrap it up at some point. We'll get there. And wrap it up in like the last 10 minutes. That did it, didn't it? That answered your question. It's like, no. That answered like one of my questions. What about all the other questions?
That answered one question that I asked at the beginning of season one.
Yeah.
That I answered at the beginning of season one.
Exactly.
Exactly the way you've just answered me.
It's like, But I had this theory at the beginning of season one. It was quite an obvious theory. I'm like, no, we were completely out of the blue. No one expected
completely
this.
Original, yep.
God, are you dying as well?
It won't go. Do you know what? It's been like this for days now. I don't get to bed till like 2 o'clock. Once I've got into bed at 10, I just end up coughing and coughing and coughing, and it's really starting to fucking do my nothing.
Aww.
It's also got to the point where every time you cough, it feels like the top of your head's going to explode.
Oh,
and your
eyes
start throbbing.
The one I hate is when you can feel it and you feel like you're trying to like cough up a chunk of lung, like you're pulling something that's like attached to your back. It's horrible.
I want it to do that. At least then it will produce something.
Yeah.
At the moment, I'm trying to cough something that won't move.
Yeah, it's the problem is you're trying to cough up your lungs and that won't actually work.
No.
It also probably wouldn't be a very good idea even if you could manage it.
No.
I'd get rid of my cough.
Well, you would
also get rid of your lungs though when you kind of need those.
Who needs lungs? I mean, honestly.
Well,
lungs are so overrated.
Unless you got gills, I'd stick with the lungs, to be honest.
Gills would be so much cooler than lungs though.
Yeah, that's true. Gills would be awesome.
But obviously, until you've got the gills, probably don't ditch the lung.
Although you wouldn't be able to swim backwards.
That's like this is the scene in Futurama where he's like, "You want gills? Breathe underwater." He's like, "Okay, where are the gills?" He's like, "Gills come next week. I take lungs now." yes, Josh, you have been playing Singularity, which is a game.
Yeah, I have.
It's a game, and I can't remember anything about it.
No, well, I got it pointed out to me that I seem to sit and play the same games over and over again. When I went through Uncharted 2 for what must be like the sixth time now, and decided that I should probably actually go through some of the games sitting on my shelf that I haven't even started yet. One of which was Singularity, which is it's an Activision published, Raven developed shooter, and the basic premise behind it is you are part of a squad sent to investigate a Soviet island base on which something creepy is going on, basically.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'd not heard anything about it for ages, and it was partly due to the fact that I don't think Activision did any marketing whatsoever for it, so much so that I didn't even realise that it had slipped from when it was meant to come out, which was the same time as Modern Warfare 2, all the way into the middle of last year, and I just not noticed.
Yeah.
But I did realise it was actually the subject of one of the playbacks that we've been doing on TSA recently.
Yeah, it was.
And it's a lot of fun. Like, I'm only about an hour and a half, something like that, into it. But basically, it started off very similar to Bioshock, in that there's a plane crash and you have to work your way up through the wreckage and into this facility. And to the same extent, it's quite creepy and there's weird flashes of the past and there's even the audio tapes and things to collect. It's just got a different kind of more, it's obviously that Russian feel, it's a bit colder. And apparently there's some kind of time manipulation, time travel stuff later, which sounds a lot of fun, but actually I'm enjoying it so far. Having said that, I have just come up to a bit where I've found another one of my squad members, and it's kind of ruined the fun, because now there's two of you running around, and it's not quite as scary as when there was just one and things were jumping out at you. Same as, I don't think Bioshock would be quite as scary if there was two characters running around in it.
Hmm.
Yeah,
but no, it's nice to see something different. Like, it's tough, because it's something new. Like, and in a shooter and from Activision. I was pretty shocked. But there's also so many elements of Call of Duty in it. Like, there's even slow-mo breaching of doors at some points. So it's sort of inspired by to cater to that crowd, but then it never actually got marketed and sold anyway. So you can find it pretty cheap.
Is so, that for both, or...?
Is that for both?
is it for Xbox and PS3?
Yes, it is. It might be used for PC as well, actually. I don't know. But it is definitely for Xbox and PS3 even.
Yeah.
But it's got like a high 70s Metacritic score, which isn't too bad.
Is that the one where you said there's time traveling thing? Is that in the trailer, like they show you if you come across a thing where a bridge is broken, you go back in time to when it wasn't broken in order to cross it?
It could well be, but I haven't got that far into it yet.
Right.
There was a bit where it sort of, you saw a statue and you flashed back and it looked like you saved someone who originally died as part of something that happened to the storyline.
Right.
And when you come back to the present day, it's that person on the statue instead. So it looks like there's actually a bit of timey-wimey messing around with stuff rather than just straightforward jumping backwards and forwards. So I'm quite excited to get into it. I just haven't had much time.
Cool. Yeah, it does sound quite different
to the other thing. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, it does sound great. Like the concept of time manipulations, it's such an obvious thing, but no one's really done it. In the same way that, like, looking at Portal was kind of obvious, but no one had really done it before.
Yeah. Yeah, well, but there was Time Shift or something, which came out a couple of years back. I want to say something like 2007, but I don't remember it going down very well. So I don't know whether it just didn't pull it off or was just a crap game in general. But no, it looks very promising. And from I've read a little bit on to see what, you know, other people's opinions of it are, and I think people were quite positive about it. Like, they just wish that Activision had supported it a little bit more, you know, rather than just focusing on Modern Warfare.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with Activision, is they do have this sort of laser focus. And a lot of Activision's decisions I stand behind from looking at it as a business standpoint. But
yeah,
I do feel that from my perspective, it's not a good business decision to focus so tightly on Call of Duty.
No.
Which, yeah, I mean, because that's the way I always... Because Activision are treating this very much like a business. So...
Well, it was like what was... Wasn't the Guitar Hero group actually called Guitar Hero Business Unit at one point?
Yeah.
Business Unit.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, really. It's that they treat it like...
No, but it's just a case of putting all of your eggs into one basket.
Yeah.
I was just saying, there is a problem with it when... If that name ever becomes mud...
Yeah, it's true.
Then they're stuck.
That's like the problem that happened.
Game. Yeah, I mean, they could make an identical game and rebadge it as something else, but it's the name that carries the value.
That's the problem that happened with, you know, Guitar Hero, is that they could have gone on and made another DJ Hero game or something like that, because DJ Hero 2 was really good. Like, they could have easily gone on and done a DJ Hero 3, but because everyone was sick of Guitar Hero and Band Hero and everything else that got, you know, ran out of it, they had to kind of just let that whole franchise and name rest for a bit. But it's kind of a similar thing as Need for Speed. Like, there's the Run that's coming out this year. I was talking on Twitter about this today. Is that it doesn't really feel like it should be a Need for Speed game. Like, Need for Speed games are just about driving, really.
Yeah.
Like, the running stuff, like, I'm annoyed that it's just button mashing. Like, they could have easily made it sort of Mirror's Edge-esque, you know, running. And they could have badged that as just a game called The Run.
Yeah.
And they could have maybe bought, you know, Shift 2 to have been the end of this year's release, something like that. They're just obsessed with making everything fit into franchises rather than releasing them as original games.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true, but the problem is, if you don't put that badge on it, it sells like a million less copies, and
Oh yeah, I'm not going to argue with it. If they've released Call of Duty Singularity, then it would have been a massive game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And brilliantly would probably have had a couple of extra review points on top of quite a few sites.
It's just really depressing, you know, but it's the way the business the industry is at the minute, and it's annoying, and it's not necessarily something you want to see, but I can understand why publishing developers go down that route, and that's how I always try to look at it. Is this is a business? This is how tens of millions of people are making their livelihood. And if Activision or EA want to treat it purely as a business, and they can make it work with gamers, and they can make it work and sell their games without a huge backlash from gamers, then more power to them. And people say there's a huge backlash against Activision, but there's not really. There's a backlash from people who read sites like TSA and Eurogamer and IGN, etc. But that's a tiny percentage of the gaming population, really. Just we don't, like, lots of people don't really realise it. But it's.
I realise it makes immediate business sense, but my sort of point of view would be, let's make another FPS. We could get away with calling it Modern Warfare and sell millions and make billions. But at the end of the day, if they called it something else and effectively created a new IP, what they could be doing is creating another name for their business. So alongside Modern Warfare, you then end up with Game X, that then goes on to have its own.
That was the interesting thing about Modern Warfare 2, when that was coming up for release, it was sort of back and forth on whether that was actually going to have the Call of Duty name on it.
Exactly.
For a while it was just Modern Warfare 2, and then it, you know, obviously it got changed to Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
But
they could easily have just made that, you know, Modern Warfare as a franchise.
Made
that a big franchise separate from Call of Duty.
What I thought was really interesting with that decision, though, was they only put the Call of Duty name, I think it was only on like the standard boxes. And if you looked at like the limited edition boxes,
the special editions,
which was really interesting, and kind of like it clearly was an attempt to start spinning Modern Warfare into its own thing. And I wonder if
I think it pretty much has. Now.
Yeah, I wonder if Modern Warfare 3 will use the Call of Duty name at all.
To be honest, it's on the box art, isn't it? But I haven't seen anyone anywhere refer to it as Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, and not just because of length, just because Call of Duty is kind of separate from Modern Warfare 3 now.
I've not heard it referenced. Obviously, when you're reading and people are writing comments, then it gets used. But when talking to people, I've never actually heard people say, oh, I'm going to play Modern Warfare. It's always, I'm going to go play COD or Call of Duty.
Yeah, that's
true. I find that most people actually ditch the Modern Warfare part of it and say they're playing Call of Duty. And you don't actually have to ask to know that they mean they're playing Modern Warfare version.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, but isn't that more just that everyone buys Call of Duty every year? And so you can say Call of Duty, and the assumption being that it's the most recent one.
Yes, yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Like, there was problems with Black Ops and things like that on PC, and then you would actually get people saying, I'm going to go and play Modern Warfare. But that was more to deliberately distance themselves from the fact they would refuse to play Black Ops. But
that is, in itself is interesting, because Black Ops is referred to as blopped.
No one really calls COD.
It's the opposite with that. I don't know if it's because it's not as popular, but if you're playing Black Ops, people let you know it's Black Ops, so it'll either be Black Ops or it'll be blopped.
Yeah.
I've not heard someone say, I'm playing Call of Duty and mean Black Ops. So it's quite weird, that one.
That's true, but it's because you can't go, there's no Modern Warfare, you can't abbreviate it into a thing. You can't go, play...
See, I think
you can't go, I'm going to go play Mo. I'm going to go play Bowfare.
No,
I'm going to go play Warfare.
I think that if someone is going to play the single player, they'll turn around and go, oh, I'm going to go and play Black Ops. I think if someone's going to go and play multiplayer, they're going to go and turn around and say, I'm playing Call of Duty.
I'd say for Black Ops, I hear Blops a lot. I do hear people say, I'm going to go play Blops a lot for the multiplayer in it. Because Call of Duty seems to be the opposite thing to what we're talking about. As Lewis pointed out, that Blops seems to be dropping the Call of Duty more than Modern Warfare is in sort of casual conversation. which is bizarre and not what you'd expect at
just,
all.
Is that just because that blob's name, like the shortened version, kind of got, it's easy to say and it
I think that's why.
Pretty quickly, whereas yeah. you can't say M3.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't work as a thing.
Yeah. Mowarf.
Because I remember it wasn't long after launch before people were referring it to... Sorry, it wasn't long after it got announced that people were referring to it as COD and COD Blobs, you know, on Twitter and the like.
Yeah.
Whereas you just can't say an M and a W and yeah, a number
exactly.
next to each other very easily.
Exactly.
Wow. Wow free.
No, because that sounds like you're saying wow.
Yeah, it's the problem.
Or just making a noise representative of a cat.
Meow. So that just sounds like you're going to go play with your cat. That's no good.
Meow.
I'm just going to go play wow.
like some weird Japanese cosplay game.
Yeah.
Go play wow.
All right.
Anywho.
Moving on. That was quite interesting discussion. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Sorry.
No, that's good. I like discussions of things. Moving on, Lewis, you've watched something called Confessions, which I assume is a form of media.
It's a film, Japanese film, Japanese. I think it's officially billed as a Japanese horror, but it's not horror. It's a Japanese thriller, and it's extremely good. It starts off with it's about this woman. She's a teacher, and her daughter's died. About 3 year old, she's died, and it's officially been closed as a tragic accident. She drowned in a swimming pool. But this woman's a teacher, and it starts off with her in her classroom, and her classroom's full of lazy little shits. They remind me of the class from Battle Royale. Mm. They're quite rebellious and dysfunctional. And they're all drinking milk and as part of an experiment, and it's all just slowly it slowly edges you in, and the teacher's just walking around the class really softly spoken, saying she's going to quit, and that she hates the pupils, they're all vile, and blah, blah, blah. And as she carries on talking, more and more of the class start paying attention. And then she basically says, I also want to let you know that my daughter didn't drown in an accident. She was murdered, and the two people that murdered her are sat in this class. And like within the first 10 minutes, and after that it instantly changes. Obviously the class start paying attention and they all start trying to work out who it is, and she goes through this whole story of she knows who they are but doesn't reveal their names, although the information she does give allows the class to work it out for themselves.
Yeah.
And she's looking for vengeance ultimately, but it's a very slow vengeance that she's planned, and is going to take years to have a full effect. And she reveals that she had done something to the milk that the students were drinking, which I won't spoil, but is very shocking. And I personally have never seen this particular thing used as a weapon like that before in this type of film. So it was very good. And she says she's put it in two of the milks, obviously belonging to the two murderers. And then from there, it sort of splits into several sections. It's done in chapters, and they're all confessions of the people involved. So that beginning chapter is the teacher's confession. And then next, you get the confession of one of the murderers and the confession of another. But the way they react to being found out and not being punished in the true sense of the word, like i.e. going to jail and what have you, you follow one of them as he starts to literally go mental, and then another one who's just a complete psycho that's just trying to get noticed and find infamy, and what have you. So it's extremely, extremely well thought out. And like I say, the actual weapon that she uses to get her own back is, I think personally, was quite original. Like I said, I don't want to say it because you'll find out in the first sort of 20 minutes of the film, but I don't want to ruin the impact of that. So yeah, check that out. It's the The only thing I will say, and this isn't a racist comment, although I'm fully aware that it's going to sound racist.
You the racist. Only... Just getting in there.
The only problem I had was about halfway through, because it's told in a sort of non-linear narrative style. The only problem I had was about halfway through, I was starting to lose who was who because they all did look identical.
Oh, man.
So, like I said, I'm fully aware that that sounds racist, but that is my genuine opinion on it, because obviously it's more difficult when they're subtitled. It's more difficult to connect straight away with who's who, because you're not entirely sure of where the names are being directed.
Yeah.
So it does genuinely take sort of the first half of the film before you become fully sort of up to speed, or for me in particular, before I became up to speed with who was exactly who.
Oh, that sounds terrible, though, because I'm fucking awful at keeping track of characters in films anyway. It's because I'm so bad at remembering names. So
it's okay, because as far as Chris is concerned, everyone looks the same anyway.
Yeah.
In films, he just can't handle it.
I suppose the only thing that helps it is because of where it's broken up into chapters specific to each character. You do get to a point where you are fully up to speed with everything. But it's done in visually as well. It's done in quite a stylish and very glossy way. It's not stylized, if that makes sense, but it's very stylish. So there's quite a lot of slow-mo shots, quite artistic shots and artistic cinematography. And a lot of it looks like it could belong to a My Chemical Romance music video.
Oh.
So it's done quite well, actually, because it is quite slow and steady. And again, like the shadow line, it allows things to sort of simmer and gather pace that way. But yeah, it's a very good sort of vengeance-based thriller.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I will.
Yeah, it does sound interesting.
Keep a lookout for that.
I'm sure.
Like I say, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to, like I say, I was, especially the first 20 minutes, because the first 20 minutes is basically one long dialogue, monologue from the teacher.
Yeah.
And it's just done brilliantly. And like I say, when she reveals what she's done to the milk of these two students, I was like, oh, shit. And it was quite, like I say, I found it quite original.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Good.
It wasn't like, you kill my daughter, I'm going to show you a videotape, and then in a week later you're going to die. And
yeah.
Well, like your typical Japanese thrillery horror stuff.
True.
It was because of it, it was quite tense because of its sort of slow and steady nature. It was really well done, I thought.
All right. No, that does sound really interesting, actually. I'm sure, I don't know where, I'm sure I've seen something about this film this week, but I don't know where, which is really weird.
I did a review on Screen Demon.
Oh, that would be it then. I knew I'd seen it somewhere. I couldn't remember for life me where it was. It must have been in my Google Reader that it popped up.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just, for the whole of the time you talked about it, I was like, I know I've heard about this somewhere. but the other thing, I just today talk about films, and I saw because I wanted to see Attack the Block anyway, but I've seen, today I saw the American trailer for it. And the American trailer is incredible. Because I thought that...
Do you mean the trailer they've made for American audience?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The
one that... Yeah, not the... They didn't make an American version of Attack the Block.
Oh, right.
Like, already. It's like, no, it was out like 2 weeks ago. And we've already done the remake.
It wouldn't shock me anymore.
But no, the trailer for American audiences. And it was it was so good. I thought it was better than the British trailer, actually.
Was it a lot more... actiony and
exactly. It was longer, and it had, I think it had funnier lines in it as well. And I think the difference in America as well is because it's only opening in select theaters over there, they really have to sell it to you, whereas because it was on like a nationwide release, there's kind of less pressure, I think.
And also I think although it is an absolutely superb film, it's going to struggle more over there because of its British nature.
Yeah.
I think it's becoming a lot more a lot more widespread in America at the moment, what with things like Paul, Shaun of the Dead, those types of things. So it's becoming, people are becoming a lot more au fait with the British humour and the British style of things. But I think even now, there's still a limited number of people that will turn their nose up just purely because they won't understand the irony or the sarcasm or the sort of the way that it works, basically.
Yeah,
I've been working with an American on a project recently, and I've had a lot of fun just using as much irony as possible in conversations with them to see how little they understand of what I'm saying.
How was that going?
He quit.
Ah,
but that's
success.
That wasn't as a direct result of my bullying with irony.
You're out of order.
I'm sorry,
man. I can't, it's like I can't understand you so much. I just have to leave. Can't deal with this.
I'm going home.
Can't take this anymore.
But you know, Attack the Block looks brilliant. Looks so good.
Oh, it is a superb one.
I not only thought it looked really good, but this trailer just made it look absolutely. But it was kind of, it was like, before it was like, oh, I really want to see this film, but I'll kind of get around to it at some point, you know? Whereas as the American trailer was like, oh God, I need to see this like tomorrow. This looks amazing.
That won't be long before it's out on DVD.
Yeah, it's true. No, I really want, I'm definitely going to get that when it's out on DVD. I'll get that. And what's the other film I really want that's on DVD? Freakonomics. That's such a good movie. Brilliant documentary. Next, Josh, I think you did something else.
Hello.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
That's the
kids' film, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It's an animated film, and I had absolutely zero interest to watch it and got bullied into it. And actually, I really, really liked it. It's a little bit different from other animated films due to the fact that although there's an overarching storyline, quite a lot of the scenes are sort of sketches that fit into that. So maybe if you don't get, you know, one or two of the jokes, I don't think it's particularly funny. There'll be sketches later on which you might find hilarious.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different in that it's more varied than the normal, you know, kids animated stuff that comes out of Pixar and DreamWorks, stuff like that. It's a Sony film, I think.
It is Sony, yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Basically, the concept is a guy makes a machine that can convert water into food, and it goes crazy and goes up into the sky, and then it starts raining food, which is brilliant to start with, and of course descends into chaos. Meatball chaos, which is my favourite type.
Well, it has to be your favourite type. It's clearly the best chaos.
No, meatballs are vile.
Wrong with you? Meatballs are vile? Good God, yeah, man.
Meatballs are really nice. How can you say they're vile?
Yeah, but...
well, they're not vile. They're average at best.
But Lewis also said they didn't like Krispy Kreme.
Krispy Kreme's vile, Chris.
I've never had
that
Krispy Kreme.
That is genuinely vile.
I couldn't possibly say.
It is exactly like I said. It's shitty quality dough, overcooked, and then jizzed on by the marshmallow man.
What's your favoured meal of choice? Yeah, you know, if you could have anything for tea tonight, what would you have then?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm not a fussy eater, believe it or not.
I just don't like meatballs, and I don't like Krispy Kreme.
I'd have a bit of steak, or... like, my favourite meal is pasta and pesto with bacon and chicken and mushrooms.
I'm suddenly regretting the decision to ask that question because I delayed my dinner so that I could do the podcast.
Yeah, that's why I had a sandwich beforehand because I was like, I need to eat now. Plus, when I got home, I was like, if I don't eat now, I'm going to fall asleep in the middle of this podcast. I'm so tired.
But anyway, yes, I agree with you on Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Yeah, I have a funny feeling. I'm not entirely sure that it got pushed as one of Sony's big like 3D movies.
Yeah, I think I remember.
I could
that,
be wrong
yeah.
with that, but there wasn't anything in watching it in 2D that I feel like particularly missed out on. I mean, I'm not a massive 3D fan anyway, but there was nothing in it that I went, "Oh, this would be really cool in 3D."
Yeah, no, I'm the same with you. I'm not a massive 3D fan, but I did think there is one particular scene that I would have loved to have seen in 3D. And that is, you know, when he's at the town meeting and there's that giant fishbowl?
Oh, yes.
And it lands on top of him and then it smashes.
Yes, that's
the
true.
The graphics of that bowl smashing were superb to the point where I rewound it about three times just to watch the bowl smashing.
Yeah, it's
3 times, and I thought I want to see that in 3D.
Yeah,
that
is it's quite interesting. Like, it's one of those films that's got a very definite artistic style.
Yes,
like you don't for most of the film actually see the guy's dad's eyes because they're covered so much by his eyebrows, and it's pretty funny. But like, it's got a very definite artistic style. But that when there's the things like that, when the goldfish bowl smashes, like the water and the smash and loads of the stuff that's related to that, all look really, really good. Yeah. So yeah, definitely a recommended film. It's a good, funny film to watch of an evening or something like that.
Yeah,
I think my favourite bit about that film is the monkey with the translator helmet.
Oh yeah, we repeatedly shouts. Is it Jelly Babies?
I can't remember now, but I remember finding myself proper creased up at this little monkey that's not in it for very long, but he's got this. He's invented him a helmet so that his thoughts are translated into English. So it's just this little monkey like staring at people and saying one-liners that cracked me up.
Mm.
Yeah, basically, the film starts with sort of this inventor as a child. And then to go from him being a child to him being an adult, it flashes through like home videos of him doing loads of failed experiments. But then all of those experiments that you see pop up at various points during the rest of the film. And so it works quite well to tie it all together.
That's cool.
Like sometimes that like it's not important when they turn up at all. Like there's one or two scenes where you see a television on legs running around, like just in the background, because he invented portable television, but it was just a TV on legs, and it ran around and jumped out of people's windows and got on with its own life. But you see it in a couple of scenes as people walk into areas, it runs out, things like that. But no, yeah, it's very funny, a lot funnier than I expected it to be.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, because I think, especially in the world of animation, Pixar have got such a monopoly, if you like, that everything else just doesn't compare. Like, and I know that's quite presumptuous and what have you, but for the most part, I think it's a valid opinion, because just trying to think off the top of my head now, but there's been loads of shit like Space Chimps and all the animated films.
Well, there's all the DreamWorks stuff.
Yeah, DreamWorks.
Like How to Train Your Dragon and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and apart from obviously Shrek and what have you, I think Pixar have it down to a T so much that anything else just seems so shit. I was of the same opinion that when Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs came out, I ignored it completely, and it was only because it was on Sky, and I had absolutely nothing else to do. I thought, well, I'll give this a watch, and gladly it was actually quite funny and quite a good watch. So.
Yeah, But I think the other studios are starting to get better now, because How to Train Your Dragon is meant to be brilliant. I really want to see that.
Yeah,
Kung Fu Panda was really good as well.
Yeah, Kung Fu Panda is great.
It's just that, like, you can guarantee pretty much that anything out of Pixar is going to be really good.
Yeah, I think that's
to be
the difference.
A bit more hit and miss.
Yeah, I think that's the real difference. Is you just know Pixar is going to be amazing. Like even stuff like Cars, which people are like, oh, it's my least favorite Pixar film. It's still people like, I'm not saying it's a bad film. It's just my least favorite of their really good
all
films.
All of the Pixar films, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's that's my least favorite as well. Yeah. But
I don't bet Cars 2 looks really good though.
I still think that A Bug's Life is massively underrated. That's my favorite.
Oh, I love
Pixar
A Bug's
film.
Life. Bug's Life is great.
See, Finding Nemo's mine. Got to be. I think the problem I have with Cars is, and I love it when inanimate objects are given characters I find that quite funny and what have you, but I think with Cars in particular, they're of such a shape and size and what have you that it just doesn't work for me in my head. I think you just think, no, you the logistics of that is crap.
I can kind of understand where you're coming from, like with things like A Bug's Life, you can sort of believe that they've got their own little life that you don't notice. And with
exactly,
the whole
yeah.
thing with Toy Story, with the fact that they do it when you're not around.
Yeah,
works
yeah,
perfectly.
I get what you're saying.
But it's the fact that in Cars, there's just not really people.
No, it's just
no,
the whole
there's, there's
world.
No recognition of the fact that the cars
they
do anything
cars.
When the people aren't around. They just seem to do it all the time.
Well, it's kind of it's not set in our world. It's this whole other world where cars are somehow the dominant species.
Yeah,
exactly. And it just doesn't. It's not as convincing.
No, it makes the whole thing a lot more cartoony than a normal Pixar film. If that makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, no, I get yeah. what you're saying. No, because there is normally like this kind of formula that Pixar do where it's like, well, here's this stuff that's kind of every day, but when you're not around, it's like this. But whereas cars is kind of like, here's these cars that every day, and then when humans don't exist at all, here's what happens.
Who built the car?
See, that's kind of why I think Cars 2 is more convincing, because although they may not have addressed the human thing at all, in Cars 1, the main bit was it was just cars being cars. Like, they weren't doing anything particular. In Cars 2, it's cars being spies, which is sort of, it's them playing another role rather than just doing driving and racing.
Yeah.
So that sounds... it may work a little bit better. Yeah, I'm still massively excited for Monsters, Inc. 2.
Yeah, so am I.
I'm not as fussed about Cars 2.
Yeah.
See, the thing I think with Pixar is that they haven't just nailed the graphic side of things. They've nailed from the story, from the point of view that it's funny. It's most of them are actually quite sort of dramatic and emotional, but the characters are spot on. And I think the whole thing, when it's all wrapped up from start to finish, it's almost perfect. Whereas things like How to Train Your Dragon and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, there are like two or three bits throughout the film that you remember, and everything else in between isn't to that level at all, or nowhere near it. So you don't get that flow. And I think that's the problem with other studios at the moment, is they don't have the writing team and the sort of scripting behind it as Pixar do, which is why I don't think that even for a few years to come, Pixar will ever be sort of knocked off their perch.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I definitely agree with that. I don't think Pixar's going to get knocked off its perch anytime soon. Right. I think other people might start getting kind of closer to their level, which we are starting to see. But with Pixar's going to be top dog for a while. I think it would take an entire new studio to.
Yeah, I was going to say as the other studios start to get to the level where Pixar are, Pixar will, because they've got the same team, will then just move on ahead of them anyway. That's true. Pixar will always be ahead, I think.
Yeah. I'm just excited to see what Pixar does next, because DreamWorks have kind of gone, okay, what we're doing now is we're doing sequels. So they're doing How to Train Your Dragon 2, they're doing Kung Fu Panda 2, and there was one where they were just like, yeah, we've got like a 7-movie plan for this franchise. I can't remember which one it was. But I was just like, that's ridiculous. Mm. Like, although Pixar are doing, you know, 2s and 3s of a couple of films, they've announced in their pipeline that there are original movies coming. And so I think that's kind of where they'll fly away again, is when everyone else is still doing the same films.
The thing with Pixar is, in their sequels, I have a completely different attitude to them doing it, because Toy Story was what, 1996 when that first came out. Toy Story 2 was 2000 something, and obviously Toy Story 3 was 2010, 2011. So they obviously, not just because of the time it takes to do them, but they genuinely seem to care. So they think if they don't have the material to make Toy Story 4, then they won't.
Oh yeah, I was fine with that when they announced Toy Story 3.
I'm just saying, but the other studios seem to not have that care. They just think that was popular, make a sequel, make another sequel, do it. And then you had Pixar people with things like WALL-E, which was just completely risky and completely different, considering there's hardly any dialogue in it for the first hour, and like I said, apart from obviously Cars 2, Monsters Inc. 2 has been announced.
That's the thing, is that it was fine. It's fine with Toy Story because like you said, it's been a couple of years apart. But now we're gonna have, I think it will be 3 Pixar movies in a row are gonna be Toy Story 3, Cars 2, and Monsters Inc. 2. I think so. There's another one in the pipeline, but I can't remember whether it falls between Cars and Monsters Inc. or it comes later.
I think
if they can make it work, then I've not got a problem with it. It's just a concern.
The only problem I think that Pixar may come up against now is that they're owned by Disney.
And yeah, but they've
Disney
been owned
are
by
not shy of releasing sequels.
Yeah, they've been owned by Disney for so long.
Not entirely.
I think it's been
it's only in the past couple of years that they've been bought outright for $4 or $5 billion.
Equally though, didn't Disney let the Narnia films go? Didn't they let someone else take over them?
Yeah.
Well, they've milked that for as much as they can.
But didn't they make the first two and then they were just like, actually we don't want to make these anymore? Like they let someone else take
over.
They've
made 4 so far, haven't they?
But is that Disney still doing it? I'm sure someone else took over.
I definitely remember Disney branding massively on the last Narnia film that was out.
I'm sure it was.
But I mean, did anyone see that Pixar documentary that the BBC did? The 25, whatever it was, 25 Magic Moments. That happened to be on again the other night, and so it was back on the iPlayer, and I watched it. Brilliant.
Yeah, no,
really good.
Because then they played WALL-E after it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I watched that. That was because I've seen loads of documentaries about Pixar, and obviously they rehashed the story about Steve Jobs getting involved and what have you.
The hidden stuff in all the films, things like that.
Yeah. The fact that they had to rewrite the Toy Story completely and what have you, because they had Woody down as the bad guy and what have you. So, it's fascinating to see how they've progressed.
Yeah. Looking at it, they firstly, Pixar's release schedule is incredible, like animated films, because they've got from 2000, they've got 2006. They've had a release every year. They've got a release this year, and they've got it's Cars 2 this year. Like you said, there is one between Cars 2 and Monsters University. There's a film. Yeah. There's a film called Brave the next year. And then after that, it's Monsters University.
Did they cancel Newt in the end?
Yeah, Newt got cancelled because apparently.
Oh man.
Yeah, well, apparently it was basically Rio is why they cancelled it. So they went, we probably shouldn't release this.
They should do, just to show DreamWorks.
How it's actually done. Here's how you make film.
By the way, Lewis, I'm totally showing you up right now. Disney made the first two films and chose not to produce anymore. And
Narnia?
Yeah, and 20th Century Fox made the third and fourth.
Really?
Yeah. It's still made by the same production company. It's still Walden Media. But Disney no longer is in charge of them.
Maybe I just got used to Disney appearing on the screen.
Yeah, that's so true.
I definitely remember. Well, obviously I don't because it didn't happen. But I stand corrected on that one. Then.
The other thing that's thing that's ridiculous with Pixar films is looking at it because Wikipedia's got a big table and they've got the Rotten Tomatoes score, and Cars is the only Pixar film that has a Rotten Tomatoes score of below 90%.
See, that's the thing. It's they're all really good films. Yeah. It's just in comparison to the other Pixar films.
Is it? I think out of all of them, I'd give Cars 3, and everything else would be at least a 4, if not all of them a 5.
Well, it's ridiculous because the lowest score apart from Cars is A Bug's Life on 91%, which is still, you know, really good. Yeah. And then Cars is 74%. Like people.
That's quite a
big people job. Did not like Cars, whereas Toy Story and Toy Story 2 have 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
See, I'm not a massive fan of Toy Story 2.
No, I wasn't either, really. I thought
it was good, and I'd probably still give Toy Story 2 4, but I think, again, like Josh says, comparing it to other Pixar films and comparing it to Toy Story, I think it was too rushed, it seemed to me.
That whole, like, the fact that the fact that Newt got cancelled, it's kind of interesting when you think of the fact that there seems to always be animated films that come along in twos.
Yeah.
Like with Finding Nemo, and then you had A Shark's Tale.
Yeah, and you had A Bug's Life and Ants.
And Ants, yeah. There's a couple like that, and it's Ratatouille and Flushed Away is another one.
Yeah.
Like, they come out within, a year of each other. It's very strange.
You get rid of Flushed Away, it's Ratatouille and The Tale of Despero, which have an exact same plot.
Oh, yeah, that's true, actually. I didn't think of that watching them.
Chef Rodent.
Yeah, that's odd.
It's weird that, like, they spend so many years in development, and yet they come out with very similar films.
Yeah, I always think, I wonder if someone's just started work at Pixar, seen what they've got planned, and then goes, oh, I'm quitting, and then run over to DreamWorks and go, they're doing a thing about fish.
Yeah, I don't want to be cynical about it, but I know that Pixar announced, like, their film slate in advance. DreamWorks may do the same, but, like, we've known about things like Brave because it had another name.
Yeah, it was called The Brave and the Bold or something.
Yeah, and we've known about New and Monsters Inc. 2 and stuff like that. We've known about that for years. Yeah. Like, they announced their slate for, like, the next 5 years. And I wonder it's whether DreamWorks are just quicker off the ball and can go, right, brilliant, let's make a film very similar to that and release it the week before.
Yeah,
but yeah, I could be, can be completely wrong with that, and DreamWorks equally announced them very early, but it's always just a strange coincidence that there's very similar films that come out around a similar time.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Right, next.
That was quite a big discussion of Pixar.
Yeah, that was quite good. Apparently we can do interesting things when Peter's not here.
You are, sorry?
When Peter's not here, you haven't got anyone to, like, you two just play each other off. It's like having, it's like when you've got, to use an analogy that would be good, that'll be, you'll understand, Lewis, it's like when you've got two naughty kids in the class playing off against each other. Are you enjoying teaching?
Well, I've only done a couple.
You're doing, substitute, aren't you?
No, it's like support assistant. Oh, okay. For one particular boy who I haven't actually met yet because he's excluded. but yeah, at the moment it's been really good. Obviously it's a school for kids with behavioural problems or learning difficulties or things like autism, that type of thing. And like sat in the class, there's these two boys in particular. One of them is quite volatile, but you watch him do his work and he is beyond extremely intelligent. It's quite scary. And he's only 10. to the point where there was this maths question, and there was me and two other like learning support assistants that were all sat around like scratching our heads going, oh, if you put that there and put that there, then you've got 7 and they're supposed to have 8. So you've got, and it literally took 3 of us about 10 minutes to work this thing out. And then we gave it to the kids and this one just went, do it, done it within about a minute. And I was just sat there like, fucking twat. But yeah, he's super intelligent. So yeah, no, it's really interesting. I mean, I'm still a bit anxious about finally being introduced to the kid that I'm supposed to be working with directly. Because anytime anyone finds out that I'm working with this boy, they all just give me the face and say,
"Oh, oh my God." Do they all do that thing where they go, "Ooh,"
yeah. And then they walk off laughing, and you think, "The fuck have you given me?
Have you given me the devil?"
Yeah, pretty much. I was quite scared, genuinely. We were doing like art or something, and everyone's got like bright sunny pictures and rainbows and stuff like that, and it's obviously none of it's actually good, but
yeah.
And they went, "Oh, Lewis, just to give you an idea, here's Blake's artwork." And they held it up. He's obviously just got half a charcoal and it's just drawn black with like white spots for eyes, and I was like, "Fucking hell, what have you given me?" This boy is a demon. It was like your stereotypical drawing that a possessed child would draw in a horror film.
Right. Competition. So last week we did two competitions. Do you want to do yours first, Lewis?
Can do, yep. So last week I played you a clip from Godfather. It was the Godfather. Which I think 6 people got correct. Let me just grab my answers up. And you know that guy that we spoke about last week? I think Simon Russell, that wasn't registered but was listening.
Yeah,
he's registered.
Oh, good.
We forced him into it. Peer pressure. I received five correct answers. So if I could have a number between 1 and 5,
Josh.
That's not a number. 4.
4, 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 is Alistair Higgins, Big Owl.
All good.
Big Owl, 1992. So
that's the year I was born.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You're young. I don't like it.
Is that how old you are?
Yeah, that's how old I am. How old do you think I was?
Oh, I don't know. That's really
depressing. I had this before when Chris told me that I put a picture or something on Twitter and he didn't think that was how I looked.
Yeah,
and I got a load of abuse Spider-Man because I didn't look how people thought I looked.
That's depressing.
Anyway, what's Big Owl 1?
I'm just trying to look. I seem to have misplaced my stack of prizes, and I can't remember what films we actually had up for grabs. So give me 2 seconds. I'll just have a quick scout. Sorry about that.
Right.
fandom.
Well done.
Sorry.
You just slipped into East London then.
You what?
Slipped into East London for a minute then. Fandom.
East fandom. Fandom. Okay, so that's last week's winner. Remember to send that. Okay, I've got four DVDs left. So one to four, please.
Two.
Two. Hook. The classic Robin Williams vehicle, Hook.
Oh, I like that film.
That is a good film.
I remember that as a child.
So we'll send that to Big Al 92, which is quite good because it's age appropriate, you youngins.
You realise 1992 born does make you about, you know, 18 or at least almost. No, wait, 19. Oh God, I forgot how old I am.
That's still young.
Yeah, don't rub it in.
I'm 24 this year. And I still
27.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
Year.
And therefore we're surely relatively young.
And Peter, I mean, I assume he's like 70 this year or something.
Yeah, I think it's nearly. I think it's 34. Which yeah, effectively
it's pretty much 70 at that age. Once you,
it's pretty much
God, he's ancient.
I mean, once you're past 30, who fucking counts anymore?
It's not even worth it anymore, exactly. Is it?
No. Should be like fucking Logan's Run.
Just basically waiting for the cold, steely hand of death to touch you on the back.
Yeah, exactly. You're waiting for the crystal in your hand to change colour.
What?
Do you not get that reference?
No.
Oh, dear. I think, is it Logan's Run, that film? I think that's the film I mean. Where they're, when everyone over 30 gets killed or something.
Right, yes.
Do you know which film I mean now?
Yeah.
I made a film reference that Lewis didn't get. It's amazing.
You did.
Congratulations.
That's probably because I didn't realise it was a film, bro.
That's true.
He just thought you were being weird.
He was like, Chris is being fucking odd. What's he talking about?
Yeah, to be fair, Chris.
Chris, have you been holding a crystal this whole time?
Yeah. Right.
He's a hippie. He's probably got them hanging everywhere.
Oh, I am a fucking hippie. Well, to be fair, who was it? Someone wants to make me more... Oh, I can't remember who it is now. I think it's Hans Truth, but maybe it's not. Someone wants to make me more of a hippie. They were like, oh, why don't you buy, like, individual toed socks?
Oh, I've got a pair of them.
And then those shoes that are, like, individual toed shoes, which may be really comfy.
Individual toe shoes?
Yeah.
That just sounds like voodoo.
But they're called... Vibra something, so I thought he was linking me to something really filthy.
To be fair, if it was Hainstruth, the chances are he probably was.
Just an accident. Alright, so we also had last week, we had the comic competition, where you had to tell me who was the Robin who died, and that was Jason Todd. And as someone pointed out, who then eventually turned out not to be dead and came back as the Red Hood to seek revenge. And I think, is it? Can't remember. Or is Red Robin someone else? Red Robin. Yeah, and then he became the Red Robin and stuff. It's a bit mental. Jason Todd is crazy. Yeah. But I think he's dead again at the minute. So, yes. So we had 8 entries into that. So, Lewis, do you want to pick a number between 1 and 8?
I'll go all the way. Number 8, please.
Number 8 is... do I count from the top or from the top down? So 8 is the first one, or 8 is the most recent one?
Depends how you want to do them. I normally just randomise them.
I'll say it's from the bottom up, so that would be the most recent. That was Andrew Farrington, who is... Fuzzalax. I don't know if I've heard you before, so talk more on TSA if you don't.
Yeah, I don't recognise the name.
Or really sorry if you do talk loads on TSA, yeah. We've just not noticed.
Yeah. Just ignored you.
Yeah, we are sorry. But yeah, you've won a copy of Batman Arkham Asylum, the comic book, not the game, and Batman Year One, which is brilliant. So well done.
It's all right.
I'm not doing another comic competition this week, but I assume, Lewis, are you doing a film competition?
I am.
Okay, you do your film competition.
This week's music is from a game, because we're alternating, remember? So here is this week's competition Musica.
I know
super easy.
Duh, I know that's from, and I can't remember what it is.
Is it really bad? Seriously? That I don't have a clue?
I know. I fucking know it is. And I've got. Did you say it was from a film or from a game?
No, it's from a game.
Oh, yeah, I think I know what that is then, yeah.
Seriously, Josh?
Yeah,
no
idea. I've got nothing. Genuinely.
I've got a suspicion I know what it's from.
I've got a suspicion that when people hear this podcast, people will be aiming for Josh.
Yeah.
I think you literally will be fearing for your life.
Could you just sort of send me what it is right now, and then we can pretend that I knew all along, and you could just edit that bit out where I don't know.
Okay, I'll send you a quick email. And then we'll do that whole thing.
You'll just be like, oh, I know what that is exactly.
Yeah. It's almost like someone just told me.
Okay, so if you know what that is, entries to lewisgaston@screendemon.com. Hooray.
Yay.
And there will be more comic competitions soon, I promise. Probably when I get paid again, because I can afford to buy comics. Because I spend too much money on comic books for myself. Right.
Way too much.
Lewis, have you done a quiz?
Well, I'm just going to use the one that we didn't use last week.
That's fine. I can't remember what that was, so can you tell me about it?
I'm going to give you, there are 1 to 10. I'm going to give you the names of two actors or actresses.
Oh, Christ.
And you need to tell me the name of the film that I am talking about.
Oh god, oh, man. I'm gonna be bad at this.
It's gonna be so bad.
So, Josh, you are playing for Peter.
I'm so sorry, Peter. I'm so sorry.
In the lead by about 50.
Yeah, we kind of stopped keeping score because I was never gonna catch up to him. If anyone
won last week though.
No, I won last week. Yeah, it was awesome.
That's what I said.
Yeah,
you did. Win last week.
If someone actually knows what the score is, email us and let us know.
I think it's about 9-6 to Peter.
Oh, it's got to be more than that. We're on 23, so that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, for God's sake, maths.
I mean, 9 plus 6 is 15. It's like 8 quizzes missing.
All right. 17-6 then.
Yeah, probably is something like that. Right.
Okay, so 1 to 10.
Right, I'm going to be bad at this.
No Googling.
Fine. I never Google anyway.
You're those bastards at a pub quiz that looks up their answers on their phone, aren't you?
Nah, I'm not a twat. I don't like doing that. It's so harsh. Go on, let's do this.
Yeah,
let's do this thing.
He looked it up on his iPad.
I wish I had. I've only got an iPad at work. Right, come on.
Steal it. Okay, question one. Keanu Reeves and Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, that's an easy start.
Ooh. Oh, I got
I'll start
one.
You off that one.
Thank you. That was a nice, easy start.
No worries. I got you back. Number two, Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman. Number three, Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon. Going very quiet. Number four, Tim Roth and Michael Madsen. Number five, Maggie Gyllenhaal and James Spader. Number six is Sam Worthington and Sigourney Weaver.
Bugger. I know what that is. What is it?
No, you don't. Take
That's
it back.
What I'm asking you, Chris.
Oh, I think it's that. Okay.
Number seven, Harrison Ford and Alec Guinness.
Oh, easy again.
Yeah, you say that.
Well, there's... Yeah.
Number eight, Tilda Swinton and George Clooney. Number nine, Ian McKellen and Christopher Lee.
I can't think where that is. I do know it.
And number 10, Kevin Spacey and Samuel L. Jackson. Sorry, Samuel L. motherfucking Jackson.
Was that Kevin Spacey and Samuel L. Jackson?
Yes.
Oh, what was that? I kind of know what that is as well. Is that recent?
Not really, no.
Since when are clues allowed?
Since
shut up. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that
was my
favourite
episode of the podcast.
Okay, how many do you think you got?
I think I've got four, but I'm fairly confident on three of them.
Joshua? Just as a quick clarification before we continue with the results, I am only 1 year into this film course that I'm doing at university, and obviously I still have a lot to learn. Maybe this isn't, what I should be studying, because I'm clearly not taking it in. I have two, and I'm reasonably sure about two.
Oh dear.
You let me down, Josh.
As you said, Joshua, Peter Joshua, is miles Joshua. Away. Like he's so ahead in the score that he is not going to hurt me, probably.
You're a film student.
Yeah. I make films. It's a film production course. I don't have time to watch films.
Don't give me excuses, Josh.
And if I do...
Next time you come on this podcast,
yeah.
I want to have seen improvement.
Well, that's not really fair, because I only got asked if I could be on this podcast, today.
No, don't give me that bullshit. So, that doesn't matter.
I couldn't prepare in that time.
When you got asked to come on this podcast, has no relation to your film knowledge.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
If it helps, I knew a couple of the actors.
It doesn't help
mentioned.
At all. No, it doesn't
help. Can we please move on from the Josh abuse? I can't handle it.
Oh, but it's fun abusing Josh. I like it. I'm enjoying myself.
Oh. Okay, number one then. Nice, easy one.
Matrix. Any of the Matrix films.
God damn! No, yeah, the Matrix. Yeah, I got that one.
Oh, you would have been kicked off this podcast if you hadn't got that. Be like, no, I don't know.
It's the Batman, isn't it? The Batman film? I can't remember.
Number two.
No, I got nothing.
I equally got nothing, apart from perhaps the Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman show.
Well, I'll put it this way. I've got nothing until six now.
Yeah, I've got number nothing until six either.
Yeah.
Number two is Shawshank Redemption.
Okay. Oh,
whoops. I saw that on a plane once, maybe. Next.
Moving on. Number three. You obviously haven't got anything. Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon was Thelma and Louise.
Yeah. You know, I so knew that one, and I just couldn't think of the title. Yeah, we'll go with that one.
Number four. Tim Roth and Michael Madsen is Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You say, yep. Did you actually get
it? Is it really bad that most of these are sort of classic movies that I should have seen?
A little bit, yeah.
Whoops.
Number five. Maggie Gyllenhaal and James Spader is the Secretary.
Ah. Mm. Ah.
Number six, Sam Worthington and Sigourney Weaver.
Is that Avatar?
It is Avatar.
I just wanted Chris to say that first, just in case, because it would have been really embarrassing if I'd got that wrong.
Yeah, it would have been.
I'll take it you got that
I did
well,
get then. That one right, actually.
Okay. And the next one, Harrison Ford versus... Harrison Ford and Alec Guinness.
Star Wars New Hope?
It is Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Wait, did you not get that, Josh?
I really don't think it would be a good time this far into the podcast to bring up Star Wars with me.
Wait.
Because,
wait.
You know, we could run out of time.
Wait. You're playing for Peter, and you didn't get a Star Wars question.
I'm playing what? Did you say?
You're playing on Peter's behalf, and you didn't get a Star Wars question.
Peter, I don't like Star
much
Wars.
Just ostracized yourself.
Yeah, but Peter might have you shot.
I don't like
Sorry,
Star Wars.
Sorry, did you just say you don't like Star Wars?
I don't like Star Wars.
Peter's going to actually kill me.
I'm actually DMing him on Twitter right now.
No, please don't.
Like, I'm not even joking. He's going to get a ferry from Northern Ireland, and he's going to actually kill
me. I'm
going
to arrive to meet you guys at Eurogamer this year, and he's just going to open the door and punch me in the face, isn't he?
With a sledgehammer.
Oh, he's going to fucking kill you. He's a big dude. He's going to fuck you up.
I'm really scared now. Please stop.
I suppose the only thing he's got in his advantage is he is 70.
I'm young here. You're meant to be protecting me.
Oh, well, I'm going to protect you. When did that happen? Have I not emailed you? I don't protect the staff. I fucking abuse the staff. All my emails are just abuse.
That's true.
Exactly.
So after that bombshell, next one was Tilda Swinton and George Clooney.
No idea.
There could have been two, actually, for this, thinking about it.
I got no idea.
Could have either had Burn After Reading or Michael Clayton.
Okay.
thinking about it. Next one, Ian McKellen and Christopher Lee.
I guess, is it Fellowship of the Ring?
It's, yes.
Yeah. That's a guess. It is.
I was just trying to think if he was in all three. I think he's in two of them.
Yeah.
No, he is. He's in all three of them. Next one is Kevin Spacey and Samuel L. Jackson.
Is it The Negotiator?
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
That's quite a good film.
That's a brilliant film. 5-2.
That's the one with with Bruce Willis, isn't it?
No.
Isn't it?
What? No, the one where Bruce Willis plays a negotiator is called Hostage.
Oh, yeah, that's the one, yeah. Okay.
I think Chris should lose a point for just saying that thing wrong that he just said.
I still win.
No, you don't. Don't lie.
I got.
You think this is your podcast? You think you can change the rules of the quiz halfway through? What's that all about? By the way, if anyone wants to tweet me abuse for not liking Star Wars, my Twitter username is Halpro.
I DM'd Peter, and Peter sent back, "That's outrageous. He's now dead to me."
Oh no. The really bad thing is I asked not so long ago to use him as a reference on my CV. Can you imagine how that's going to go now, can't you?
It's like, well, Josh is hardworking and all, but he doesn't like Star Wars.
Josh once killed a man with his shoe.
Josh is horrible to work with. I wouldn't employ him in any circumstance whatsoever.
That was fun.
Right, I think it's question time, and then Josh, Josh goes into protective custody. we've only got a few questions this week, which is a little bit depressing. Before we do questions, because he asked twice, Jasonum wants us to talk about folding, and yes, you should fold. Folding is very good. It
so
helps cure
just
cancer
the
and things.
On the floor.
What?
That was a joke about folding clothes.
Well done.
But yeah,
well done.
It would help if you turned your microphone on.
Damn.
You have gone extremely
quiet.
Yeah,
you did this last time.
It does this sometimes. This is just my microphone is shit.
It knew you were going to make a bad joke and it saved you from the embarrassment.
No, it basically is now deducted my opinions from the podcast based on not liking
the microphone's gone, fuck you.
So Skype actually has like an algorithm built into it. Goes, what? You denigrated Star Wars. Oh, you're fucking
gone.
You
might have to turn me up from here on in if I go horrifically quiet. I'm sorry.
Right. So yes, you should fold. And he also says, if you don't fold, it's like you're pro diseases.
That's quite something.
It's a good
professional diseases.
I think it means you're in favor of diseases. If you don't want to be in favour of cancer, you should fold. If you're happy being in favour of cancer, then don't fold. That's how it is. I hope you can live with your decision.
Not really bad.
Right. Actual questions.
Bummer there.
Audio Worm says, 2 weeks on, how is Lewis dealing with his Tumblr stardom? Do you want to talk about this? Because we didn't really mention it. Your Tumblr stardom. We didn't talk about this, did we?
That was quite scary.
Is this that way we're leaving? I have no idea what he's talking about.
I did a painting of Gordon Freeman, and as we've established, I haven't played Half-Life and I'm not overly keen on it, but I was doing it anyway, and then sort of Peter was in a bad mood or something, so I sort of rush finished it to send it to Peter, and then I put it on my DeviantArt profile, and then someone who has a Tumblr account called Video Game Nostalgia saw it and decided they were going to put it on Tumblr. And then Audio contacted me and said, do you realise that one of your paintings has had over 11,000 likes and reblogs? And I was like,
whoa.
I was like, holy fuck, which one? And then he sort of linked me. It had made Tumblr's what they call radar. Which is like 3 or 4 of the most reblogged things at the time, and it stayed on the radar for the best part of a week, and Last time I checked, it had just short of 18,000 likes.
Jesus.
And comments.
As they didn't ask you to put it on Tumblr, can you like, can you charge like a quid for every one of those reblogs?
I wish. No, I did sort of contact them and say, and said thank you for sort of putting it up there. And
yeah. Have you had anyone like request prints or anything?
I had a few people contact me on DeviantArt saying, can I buy this? And obviously, because of copyright, I can't sell it. So I've just said,
yeah,
just save it to your desktop and sort of print it off. Do whatever you want with it there. But yeah, I've had a few. I've had obviously a few negative ones as well, which always seem to be louder than the positives. But I sort of managed to ignore them at the moment.
Good.
Good man.
But yeah, no, I contacted the actual blogger and said... I said thank you for doing it, and obviously thank you for bringing it to people's attention. And he was really nice. He just said, no, my pleasure, really love your stuff. And he said, anytime you want me to sort of put up another one, just let him know. So I'm going to let him know about the snake one and see if that takes people's fancies.
Cool. Yeah. I do like your stuff. It's really good.
So yeah, that was very scary.
You did be Batman. That was pretty awesome.
I did.
I get that sometimes. You know, when you upload something to YouTube, like something, you know, something you've actually done, you forget it's there, and you go back like a couple of years later, and you don't realise there's like, you know, a couple of dozen comments and a crap load of likes on it, and you're just like, whoa, when did that happen?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that. I mean, if it wasn't for audio, where I'm actually being on Tumblr, that would have just gone completely under my radar.
Yeah,
and it's weird to think that, you know, nearly 20,000 people could have
seen it without you
liked
knowing.
And reblogged, yeah, and without me ever finding out. It's quite bizarre.
Yeah,
but yeah, like you say, I mean, even on YouTube, the video of me playing the piano, like last time I clicked in, that was nearly 7,000 sort of views, and I was like, fucking hell.
I once made a funny video when I got my new computer. We made a funny sort of spoof unboxing video with my friend. We'd done it, and we'd put it up and thought it was a laugh. And I came back to it about 6 months later, and like the people that made the computer had featured it on their website about 4 times over, and like loads of people had seen it, and I was like, Christ.
Yeah.
I do love it when things like that happen.
Especially YouTube. I mean, I went, like my music and stuff, I was thinking, oh, should I put it on YouTube, you know, get it out there. And I mean, it took me a long time to load it up onto YouTube, purely because the majority of people that comment on there are just so ignorant, bigoted, and just fucked up that you don't know the part. YouTube's community, no offense to anyone that uses it regularly, is just a mess. It's an absolute
It really is.
Mess.
It's absolutely terrible.
So yeah, that's why it took so long to put anything on YouTube. And even then, I was really scared of like, because I obviously take negative, I take constructive criticism.
Yeah.
Now. I just negative stuff. I just don't. Like I say, it's loud. It's much louder than any positive anyone would give you.
Yeah.
And it will always go to the back of my head. So I was always a bit nervous about that. So
yeah. Hey, you're not as bad as me. I think I had like one half negative comment on my Socom review, and someone tell me off on Twitter about it, and I went crazy on the podcast the following week. I don't do criticism.
I think my one and only review I did for TSA was Ratchet and Clank, and it was a couple of months after it had actually come out. And I think the first comment on it was, well done, Lewis, nothing like keeping up with the times. And I was like, oh, you fucking bastard, never did another review.
Yeah, well, like I said, go read comments on the Halo Reach review.
That's so true.
That's entertaining.
I do love it whenever we post anything positive towards the 360.
It's always fun, isn't it? that's not to say that there are a load of fanboys on TSA. There aren't. None of the core people are really fanboys. It just occasionally seems to bring people out of the woodwork. What's also really odd is people who say, oh, if this was a 360 game, it would have got loads more. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not sure it would have.
That was quite interesting coming out of E3, the amount of, like, you know, when sites do their best of E3 games, things like that. The amount of sites that the shortlist for 360 games was multi-platform games. Like, there wasn't a lot of people who were particularly excited about 360 exclusives.
Yeah,
there was quite a lot of sites. You know, there was things like you know, like big Sony exclusives and Nintendo exclusives for those platforms. But as soon as you got to the our picks of E3 for the 360 was things like Assassin's Creed Revelations and that sort of thing.
Oh well. Next question. I don't know how we got to that from that's weird. Next question.
Sorry.
Peter says, do you miss me terribly? Is there a painful hollow emptiness in your hearts because I'm not there making bad nod jokes? Well, I thought there would be, but we seem to have had quite a good podcast without you, to be honest.
I'm putting on a brave face.
Are you? Are you
it's hit me quite hard.
You hurting inside?
I miss him.
I was going to say, I do have a knob shape hole in my heart now.
My bed's gone cold.
Oh, my God. It's too terrible, Peter. We can't do this without
you. It was fine when I was on the podcast before and there was the three of you and me, but now I feel like I'm filling a void that I could never possibly hope to fill.
Yeah, you'll never
fill. No, I know that.
In fact, if I were you, I'd just leave. You're making it worse.
I'm sorry.
I miss Peter.
No, I miss Peter. It's not the same without him.
Oh, it's so sad. So, yes. Yeah,
Peter's my partner in crime. Right now, I'm feeling that you're getting away quite lightly.
Yeah.
Especially last week as well. Last week, you weren't tormented or bullied.
Yeah, but to be fair, last week was a ridiculous podcast. And plus, last week, me and Peter were too tired to do anything.
Making you rage quit just loses all of the fun if I haven't got Peter... like cheering me on encouraging me in the background.
Last time I was here, I think I started talking about Doctor Who with about 30 seconds left to go of the podcast, and eventually you rage quit.
Yeah. I have rage quit before the podcast was even over because of Lewis. I rage quit once because he pissed me off so much.
My proudest moment.
Yeah, it was so funny. I rage quit before I'd even finished saying goodbye. what other questions have we got? Adam Guest, 1985, says, quick question. Since it's Father's Day on Sunday, did your dad have any influence in your early gaming life, and did he game himself?
My Baja is a massive PC gamer. Huge. But funnily enough, it didn't really have an effect on my gaming sort of growing up. Like we had the Master System and the Mega Drives and things like that, as pretty much everyone did. But I think in terms of when I was probably a young teenager, that's when the influence came the most, because I used to play things like Age of Empires, and he used to pass me the games that he'd completed, and I'd play them on my shitty computer. But Age of Empires and things like that. So yeah, I think on some level he probably did. But yeah, he's a huge PC gamer.
That's cool.
He's into good FPSs. Like he hates COD and he likes Modern Warfare 2 because of the sort of special ops missions and stuff. So he likes really difficult games and flight sims and things like that.
Yeah,
that's cool. See, my dad was an arse. And left, but when he did, he left his PS1, and like what was?
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh.
It's okay. I laugh about it.
I'm just gonna laugh at your pain. It's like your dad. Oh, your dad left. It's so funny.
No, he left his PS1 and left like all of like the 1997 EA Sports games, and I never really played many of them except I got really into, I think it was NBA and NHL, which I really enjoyed, but. You know, I kind of left gaming and didn't do too much. And then when he was basically trying to get back into my good books a couple of years later, which also failed, he bought me a PS2 and the GTA 3 and Vice City double pack.
All right.
And basically those were probably the things that got me into gaming in the end. Like building up a massive collection of PS2 games and really liking Vice City and then leading me here.
Yeah, that's cool. My dad, I've talked about this before in an article at Christmas. My dad was hugely influential in it. My dad is the entire reason I game. I can't beat Sonic 1 without him still to this day. I can't complete Sonic 1.
I have had the cutest thing you've ever said, Chris.
I have to have my dad there, or I have to have it on like one of the ones that lets you like save at any time. Because otherwise I can't beat the jungle world without him. Yeah, I get stuck, which is sad. And I weirdly can beat the boss and he can't beat the boss, but I can't beat the other levels. So I have to have him to get me through the two levels till the boss, and I can do the boss. But yeah, no, he wasn't ever a huge gamer, but he played Sonic with me when I was little, and he played he had a Spectrum, and he let me have all his games because he used to have lots of stuff on tape. Obviously, man, I remember when games were on tape. We need to really want to play a game.
So I'm gonna make you feel really old now and say I don't remember that at all.
Oh, you fucker. yeah,
I remember it. BBCs.
Well, at least I now know that when Chris sends an abusive email out, I can just turn around and just say, "Oh, go play Sonic." And that's an okay reply.
I do love Sonic.
You can't do it by yourself.
Oh man, I fucking love Sonic. Well, I'm fine until I get to the jungle world. I'm like, oh, bollocks.
I don't think I've ever completed a level in Sonic, ever.
But I'm Sonic.
As in, I just can't do it. And then my girlfriend switched on Sonic 1 the other day, like the version that was on the PSN, and just ran through the first level, and then the second one, and the third one, and I just felt completely inadequate.
What, you've never even completed, like, Emerald Hill Stage 1?
I think I've either just not managed it or just given up completely.
Oh, dear. Right.
You really haven't got that much.
No, I remember
Stage 1, you could like jump a couple of times into it at the
end. Do you remember that Real Arcade thing that Real Player did like a little while back? They've stopped it all now. They used to do it. And there was all of like the 2.5D ones, sort of the isometric ones. Those I could do. I had no problem with that at all. It was just the original Sonics. I just can't handle it. It goes too fast, my brain can't process it.
Oh dear.
Get out.
I'm sorry.
Just leave.
I'm never coming back on this podcast, am I?
you can't beat Sonic. You insulted Star Wars. No, you're never coming back. Right.
Unless it's a Star Wars and Sonic special, and you brought me on especially for humiliation.
Yeah. Next question. Emek Crash says, do you think there's too much hand holding in today's games? It depends on the game. I don't think he means literally holding your hand, presumably.
Apart from, you know, the Ico re-release.
Or Fable. Yeah.
I mean, there's some, but like I've just got into Mod Nation Racist. Like, I picked that up the other day, and that actually gets hard quite quickly.
Yeah.
Like,
God, does anyone actually remember Mod Nation Racist?
Yeah, it only came out last year.
Exactly.
They're still releasing DLC for it. I just hadn't noticed. But
I think that was the issue with Mod Nation Racist. I don't think anyone noticed that they were still going.
Wait, did it actually come out last year?
Yeah, it was last year, I think. I'm sure it was like middle of last year.
And Christ, does like, that mean they've done three games in like 2 years? Because it came out on the PSP as well. And it's coming out on Vita.
Well, yeah, because they're just like they're desperately trying to make people care about Mod Nation Races. Everyone's like, if you fix the fucking load times, I might give a shit.
Yeah, there's stupid load times in that game.
Yeah. Yeah, that is an issue. The only game I think I've seen that was worse was WWE All-Stars, which is depressingly long.
So doesn't Duke Nukem have excruciatingly long load times as well?
I haven't seen the Duke Nukem load times. I've heard they're bad, though. But the WWE All-Stars load times were literally... I just nearly walked away. Like, me and Davs were sitting there about to play it, and it was a good like 3 or 4 minutes to load into a match. Bad.
Well, I know Mod Nation can take a good like 50 seconds. I seem to remember Bioshock, like the original Bioshock when it got ported to PS3 was a bit iffy.
Yeah, it was.
But that took a while to load up. It was around that time where we were all having fiascos, debates about how they'd managed to have like 4 gigabyte install options on games and it still take fucking forever.
Yeah, what is up with that on PS3? They're like, oh, we install the data, but it's still really slow.
It's still really, really slow.
It's like, we install the data, but then we don't actually access it. It just sits there.
It's quite funny when, like, with all the people complaining about, like, the amount of load times on on Duke Nukem, because I'm sure I read Digital Foundry's sort of analysis of it, and the game size is actually 4.5 gigabytes or something on the disc, and the install size is only like 4.3 gigabytes. You have to wonder what exactly they haven't installed on the PS3 version, and yet it'd still be that lengthy load times.
I don't know what they're doing. It's ridiculous. The other problem is you look at it and you're like, well, what if they didn't install it? What happens then? Jesus. If it's not,
I mean, what's the Blu-ray drive on the PS3? It's 2x read speed or something.
Yeah.
So it's not. It is pretty slow. You have to be honest.
Yeah. Anyway, we should probably answer this question. I don't know if there's too much hand holding. I think it depends on the game. Like Portal, there's almost no hand holding. But, Josh, you're going to say you haven't played Portal, aren't you?
No, God, I love Portal.
That's fine. I'm not a monster.
You know?
I was just like, well, that would follow the pattern of this podcast so far.
I've not played Portal.
Oh, dear. Yeah, but to be fair, I expect less of you in terms of games. I just expect you to go, I've watched that movie, no matter what movie I say.
Whereas I have no excuse as a film student to have not seen half of the films that you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
As a film student and someone that games.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're fucked.
You don't like Star Wars. You've never played a level of Sonic.
No, I've played and bought them. I've just not managed.
Which makes it a little bit sad that you're like, I spent money on this and I can't beat level one.
Yeah. Do you know, if I were you, Josh, I'd just give up on life.
That's charming, that is. My old man.
But I'd say definitely compared to old games, there's more hand-holding today. Certainly.
Yeah.
Compared, you look at like NES and SNES games and stuff. There's way more handholding now.
Yeah, but then the difference is now that there's a lot more. You know, gaming is a lot more mainstream now.
Yeah, and
it's
to
got
be fair,
that way by having handholding in it.
To be fair, games are a lot more complex now.
I was going to say, yeah, the mechanics involved in a lot of the games nowadays are so much more that you need that first sort of tutorial level in order to get the most out of the game.
Yeah. When you've got a controller that's got a dozen buttons on it compared to things like the early Marios and Sonics and things like that will just move and jump, you kind of need a bit more, you know, explaining of what's going on. I do hate at the beginning of a game, though. I started playing SOCOM again for some reason. God knows why, because I didn't enjoy it. But I was playing through the beginning of SOCOM again. It's got one of those things where it won't let you do anything else until you've looked up, looked down, gone, yes, that's okay, look left, look right, gone, yeah, that's okay. And then introduce you to all of the other controls gradually. Like, you can't take cover until it tells you can. I hate that.
Exactly. But again, you look at like you look at Mario, and there's not really a lot you'd say. Like, you move that way and jump.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Final question. There's I don't really want to ask, but I suppose it will, because I did say I'll answer questions. Dust514, what's your thought on the game itself and its integration with Eve and PS Vita? Did they say it was going to be integrated with PS Vita?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, they had the big circles on the back of the stage at E3, and they went, you know, announced Vita.
Dust514, Lewis. It's a top.
No, sorry, what game?
Dust514.
Oh, I thought that was the name of the Twitter.
No, that's the game of the game.
Yeah,
Dust514. Yeah.
Do you know you know Eve, the MMO that's set in space?
No.
Okay, that's probably where you're gonna fall down a little bit.
Yeah. You just go watch a film for a bit, Lewis. Okay.
We'll talk about the complex things.
Yeah, but Dust514. I don't know, like the idea of, because basically, Lewis, the idea is that it's kind of like.
Sorry, I've gone to watch a film.
That Dust514, shut up. The idea is that Dust514 is like an FPS on consoles, and Eve is this space-based MMO. But there's like this connection between them. So like in Eve, you can set missions for mercenaries in the FPS and stuff like that.
So it's basically like if you imagine any RTS where you spawn a bunch of troops and send them off to fight. Well, the console game Dust514 is that fighting. But like, as much as it sounds cool, there's two fundamental problems with that. The first is that all that's in the game? Like, I really hope there's a story mode as well, because that'll really piss me off if there's not. But secondly, surely it takes away a bit of the strategy element from E, in that, like, normally the whole point is in an RTS or in, you know, an MMO like that, you'd be making sure that you've got really high quality leveled up, you know, fighting troops to send down. But then when you were playing Dust514, if the other team is massively more overpowered than you, it's not going to be enjoyable as a game. But equally, yeah, if you do it the other way and you make both of those teams on the ground, you know, equally powered, then it takes away the strategy element completely, and it's just a complete gamble on who wins from an Eve player's point of view.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really, just the whole idea of it seems brilliant. Just kind of connecting the two together and expanding on the MMO without actually expanding the MMO itself is a really interesting concept.
It's things like that that make the reason that I love the PS3, the fact that the PSN's a bit more open and can do stuff like that.
Yeah, it's annoying because I would say
it's not a bit more open. It's
exactly
completely hacked wide open.
Yeah, but to be honest, so is everything else this week.
Yeah, that's true.
Including Eve, so.
Yeah. But I would say, in terms of service, like, the Xbox Live seems to have the edge, but just the openness of PSN lets them, just gives them so many more avenues that they can pursue easily. Whereas with Microsoft, it always seems to turn into these, like, protracted negotiations. But with Sony.
And they never come to anything.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. They do stuff, but it took them, like, this long to get YouTube. But
that's why it always surprised me about the Rock Band Network. The fact that that is on Xbox but not PS3, I thought was crazy. Surely you'd think, you know, logically in terms of open systems, exactly, that it would have been the other way around.
Yeah, that's true.
The home of user-generated content isn't really the 360, is it?
No, definitely not. Dust 514 looks very cool. It could certainly be interesting. I'm a bit frustrated that it's only on PS3, but like we said, it's all to do with the openness, and I do wish the 360 was more open. I fucking wish I could just have an iPlayer on my 360.
I just think it's crazy that there's just not a web browser. That just seems bonkers to me.
Yeah, it's irritating. But then again, look at the PS3 has a web browser. Look at that web browser.
The point is, like, on the 360, like, they've just got YouTube. It wouldn't have been a problem before not having a YouTube app if there was a web browser to watch YouTube videos in.
But then again, imagine on the 360 it would be Internet Explorer.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I have enough problems with Internet Explorer on my Windows phone. It's some of the things it do are ridiculous. Like, when it can't find a signal and it says, oh, this page cannot be displayed, you walk back into signal and you'll have to refresh it about 7 times before it realises it's actually got signal. It won't even try. It'll just be like, no, I'm not giving you that page.
No. Do you know what was amazing, though? Today, because we've just got a Motorola Zoom in the office to play with. That actually has tabbed browsing on it. The web browser has proper tabs, like as in Google Chrome-style tabs. So they're just at the top of the browser.
Safari and, you know, Internet Explorer Mobile and all of that have tabs. It's just that there's not a place for them to go on the actual screen, is it?
Yeah,
which
to me is just a little bit irritating.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't tab to browse in the same way. In fact, most of the time I forget that there's another 6 windows open, and that's why my battery is draining.
Exactly. Whereas if you just have tabs, you're like, oh, it's just the tabs are nice and visible. Whereas when you hide them away, you kind of forget that they exist.
I just think it's kind of a different reason that you have a tablet to a phone, though. Like, web browsing on a tablet is the same reason that you browse. It's just a more leisurely way to browse than on your PC. Whereas I'm not going to be sitting there on my phone with 2 tabs open next to each other, reading in news stories and writing them up on TSA. Kind of different.
That's what I don't like about the i. That's why, although I use iPads all day at work, I wouldn't buy one for myself because I'm too much about media creation. I'm not as much about media consumption.
I agree with that, actually. Probably summed up quite well why I wouldn't get an iPhone.
Yeah, they're not for creation, they're for consumption, and that's fine. They definitely have a place for that, but
you can't even delete or, you know, edit photos or anything on an iPad, can you?
No, exactly.
Like, you can't delete or modify or anything the ones that are already on there.
Oh, you can. No, you can because it's got like finger majig now. You can't delete, but you can edit them because it's got editing software on it.
Yeah, but it's like crazy that you couldn't, like, you can't go through. Like, say you can.
Yeah, no, I know.
They make a big thing about the fact that you can, like, download music and stuff from iTunes onto your iPhone, but then you can't actually get rid of it to make space for anything else.
Yeah, no, that annoys me, not being able to delete music straight from the device.
Because it's like, yeah, you can put more music on there, you can buy loads more music, but you can't get rid of the stuff that you've got on there to make some space for it.
No. That is a bit annoying.
Did we go straight off the question again, didn't we?
I think we answered it at some point. right, probably. I don't fucking know. Sorry, Danorgi, if we didn't really answer that. I tried. And every time I tried, it was like, fuck it, it's trying to grab an eel. Every time we tried to answer it, it just suddenly slipped out of our fingers and talked about something else.
That was such a weird simile.
It worked well.
It's just like
they
grappling with an eel.
Time in Brighton.
Yeah, I'm grabbing eels every day. Right.
All right, keep it to yourself, Chris.
Alright, this has been episode 23, and it has been episode 23 of the Oscar Mike Media Podcast.
Sure.
Yeah, I am. I have been, as per usual, except for that one time, your host, Chris Luscombe. Also, I'm not here in like a fortnight. I'm joined, as per normal, by Lewis Gaston from ScreenDemon.com, who you can find at twitter.com/LewisGaston. Unfortunately, as we said, Peter is off sick. Please get better soon, Peter. We know you're really actually quite seriously ill,
and I'm sorry about your quiz score.
Yeah,
and I love you.
Yeah, and we miss you. And I think you should be back next week because the doctor said you just need a week's bed rest or something. I hope.
And I'm not allowed back on the podcast.
Yeah, and you're not allowed back. And you have to find someone else to do it next week. So yes, hopefully Peter feels better. Everyone send Peter like get better messages. And we were also joined this week filling in for Peter, Josh, who you can find on the Six Axis, and you can find at Twitter, twitter.com/Josh L. Hood. You can find me at twitter.com/HalPro. This feels weird because there's no school disco. It's deeply confusing.
I'm trying to stop my head from throbbing to explosions.
So. All right, then. Sorry.
I've let you down.
Nah, it's all right. I'm sure I can manage. This is what it was like when those weeks when you were off sick. And I just couldn't end the podcast. I got really confused. Because no one was interrupting me.
Chris, or we'll all rage quit.
Yeah. this has been episode 23. Thank you all for listening. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Apparently, Peter is the bad influence in this group.
He is.
I think it would be Lewis if he wasn't coughing all over the place.
Shh, it's totally Peter. It's totally Peter. If the police ask, it's definitely Peter.
You didn't. Peter just sent those immigrants into your basement. It wasn't you.
Well, no, and the paperwork that requested them is forged.
Peter said all of those things about people from different races looking the same. That wasn't me that said those at all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's all that anyone need know.
I even heard that he was responsible for that thing that happened the other
week. Oh dear.
I heard Peter is lolsec. He's been hacking everything.
That's actually why he's off. He's too busy hacking.